Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to God's glory and that of his kingdom. We're on the road, as you can tell, not in our normal studio and very much flying by the seat of our pants, as you can tell perhaps by the backdrop. We're in a hotel in Orlando at the moment, on the margins of the National Religious Broadcasters meeting, which I'm pleased to be able to attend to talk about, among other things, our new book, The Indictment. But in the meantime, we're delighted to be able to speak to a man who contributed mightily to that book as one of the frequent contributors to our webinars of the Committee on the Present Danger China, of which he's a very important member. His name is Dr. Bradley Thayer. He's no stranger to this program, that's for sure. We feature him regularly and are proud to do so. He's these days the director of China program at the China program at the Center for Security Policy, as well as the author of a terrific new book, co-author with Lian Chaohan, of Understanding the China Threat. He's also a prolific contributor to various outlets, including Epoch Times and The Hill. And we're delighted to be able to speak to him for a full hour about some very, very important developments in his portfolio, the threat posed to us, that is, by the Chinese Communist Party. Bradley Thayer, it's good to have you back. Welcome, sir.
Frank, thank you very much indeed. It's my pleasure to join you today.
Thank you. A lot to talk about, and I'm so grateful that we've got the time to do so at some length. I think I'd start, Brad, with the, well, for want of a better term, seeming charm offensive that the Chinese Communist Party is launching with the active support of the Biden administration. I'm told that the National Security Advisor to the president, Jake Sullivan, met for some 8 hours recently on the margins of other meetings with a Chinese counterpart. And that has now seemingly set in motion, the idea of restoring a hotline that has not been operating and perhaps having other improvements to the relationship, including conversations at high levels. What's actually going on here, Brad, as you see it? You've studied these guys closely, ours as well as theirs. Is there something more to this than meets the eye?
Frank, there is. And sadly, it doesn't augur well for the security of the United States and its allies in international politics. The Biden administration has sought to return to the failed engagement strategy of every president before Trump, who changed, thankfully, the direction of our policy towards the People's Republic of China, towards one appropriately of confrontation. What we're witnessing is the fruition of Biden's return to engagement. That is where he's going to work with the People's Republic of China to advance its economic interests, its security interests, and its global interests as well. So we're on the cusp of additional meetings, as you mentioned. It's been clear in the last few weeks that they've been driving towards having another phone call or engagement between Xi Jinping and Joe Biden. And that's always a mistake. But nonetheless, we can witness with the return of engagement, Biden's dismissal of the spy balloon as a silly item, as a silly thing, captures that this administration is keen to get back to full engagement with the People's Republic of China at the cost of U.S. national security. The PRC is continuing to expand and grow under Biden, and they're not meeting resistance. And our allies have noted that and are expressing that with increasing force and with some rapidity, that they're worried about the direction of the Biden administration, as we all should be when it comes to the People's Republic of China.
Brad, the subject of allied relations and perceptions of what's going on is something I want to turn to in a moment with you. But just to sort of round this out, to the extent that the Biden administration is comprised of people, starting with the President of the United States himself, alas, but many of his subordinates, including Jake Sullivan, I think, and Tony Blinken, the Secretary of State, among many others, have a, shall we say, relationship with the Chinese Communist Party. In fact, we've made a point of noting that, as our colleague Sam Faddis, a career undercover operative of the Central Intelligence Agency, has put it, the President of the United States is using the terminology of the intelligence business, a, quote, controlled asset of the Chinese Communist Party, unquote. Do you think it's possible that what we're seeing here in terms of both the Chinese deception about their true intentions and the Biden team's willingness to essentially endorse its seeming false interest in improving relations at a time it's preparing for conflict against us is just further evidence of the elite capture, as it's called by the Chinese, of our senior leadership.
Frank, you document extraordinarily well in your book, The Indictment, this problem and how it is, it shadows the Biden administration. As you note, not only with the President Biden and his family, with evidence coming out from Representatives Comer's committee and others' committees as well, with respect to Biden's family and the money that they've received from a variety of governments, but most worryingly, the People's Republic of China. And also, as you noted, Frank, with senior leadership, and that would be Anthony Blinken, I think, so Secretary of State, National Security Advisor, all are causes of great concern. What we're witnessing is appeasement of the People's Republic of China. Now, is that appeasement based in their corruption, in their graft? Well, that's certainly a possibility. We have seen a softness on China with this administration that needs to be explained by something. The PRC has signaled consistently that they're intent on changing the international order, their intent in attacking the United States. They're going to conquer Taiwan and eject the United States from the Western Pacific and indeed globally, because it is a global threat that we face. And yet this administration consistently appeases them. And that has to be explained. It's not in the interest of having better relations. If that is the intent, then how could you have better relations with a country which is intent to destroy you, as Xi Jinping has made quite clear time and again? And the signal from our allies, Frank, and we'll touch on this in just a moment, but it's quite clear. Allies are like good friends. When you're going astray, good friends tell you what? They tell you, hey, you're going astray. This isn't working. You might want to think about changing course. And our allies are now signaling that overtly, openly, that they're worried about the Biden administration. So when your friends are telling you you've got a problem, it's time to recognize you've got a problem and change course.
As the old expression goes, friends don't let friends appease mortal enemies, including theirs, of course, as well as ours. I guess, Brad, the only, Philip, I could add to your point about you can't have warmer relations with a country that's seeking your destruction is, I guess you can if you surrender. And whether that's what the Biden team has in mind for us is what we will be talking about after a very short break. More with Dr. Bradley Thayer, the author of Understanding the China Threat. Stay tuned. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Representative Michelle Bachmann may no longer be in the U.S. Congress, but today she is serving our country far more capably than all but a handful of those who are. For the past week, Ms. Bachmann has been forward deployed in Geneva, Switzerland, where she is monitoring the most ambitious element of the Biden administration's multifaceted wrecking operation against our country. What she has witnessed firsthand should strike fear and fury in the hearts of every American patriot. Geneva hosts the World Health Organization and other international institutions that, along with their principal master, the Chinese Communist Party, seek global governance. They're pursuing the end of national sovereignty and, as a practical matter, that of our constitutional republic and freedoms. Michelle Bachmann and the rest of our sovereignty coalition are determined to prevent that betrayal of America. Stand with us now at sovereigntycoalition.org. This is Frank Gaffney. Welcome back. We're continuing our hour-long, very important, very timely, very special conversation with Dr. Bradley Thayer, my colleague at the Center for Security Policy, as well as one of the eminent authorities on the Chinese Communist Party, noted for his numerous books on the subject of what China is about, the dangers it poses to us, including his newest book, co-authored with Lian Chao Han, entitled Understanding the China Threat. And Brad, you've teased now twice the idea that our allies are not happy with what they now obviously discern as the increasing fecklessness of the Biden administration in the face of a growing threat to them as well as to us from the Chinese Communist Party. This is presumably only sharpened by the cancellation by Joe Biden of his anticipated meetings with 18 different leaders from the Western Pacific and Papua New Guinea, and subsequent to that, a meeting with the Quad, as it's called, in Australia. That would be Japan, India, and of course, Australia, together with the United States. Before we get to the allies and what they're actually saying, underscore for us the significance of that cancellation.
It was a strategic misstep by the Biden administration. It's a big mistake. Papua New Guinea is a key ally that had reached out to us and was warmly anticipating the visit by President Biden. It had declared a national holiday for his visit to Port Moresby. And of course, when he did not show up, there can only be profound disappointment that while Secretary Blinken came, the president did not. Secondly, he was then to continue to Australia to address the Australian Parliament and to have a meeting of the Quad. Frank, as you mentioned, the leaders of India, Japan, Australia, and the United States, which is very significant in terms of signaling to China that its encroachments, that its aggression is going to be checked by those states and let's hope in time others as well. So he's made two major mistakes. And third mistake that was made was the excuse given that he needed to return to deal with debt negotiations. Now, of course, Frank, as you well know from your time in the Pentagon, Air Force One can communicate with anybody at any time in any environment on the planet. So the idea that he had to return for in-person negotiations, which could easily be done through secure communications, is obviously dissembling and was seen as such by Australian commentators, national security commentators, as well as other individuals. So there are three major mistakes that the administration has made in the space of one day. In terms of this decision. it has to be addressed. There's no substitute for an in-person meeting of the Quad in place. The fact that Modi went to Papua New Guinea and to Australia is an important signal. Modi will pick up the slack that Biden cannot, for whatever reason. There's suspicion that it was personal stamina, that he's just exhausted with these meetings, and to go on to Papua New Guinea and Australia was beyond him physically. More worryingly, it might be that he's signaling weakness to China.
Well, and that's what I wanted to get into with you, Brad, because it's one thing to have made a strategic mistake, or as you say, three strategic mistakes. If there's another explanation for it, which is that it's not a mistake, it is intentional. It is, again, serving the interests of the Chinese Communist Party. I want to talk with you a little bit about the previous meeting that he did attend, Joe Biden, and that would have been the G7 meeting in Hiroshima. And in fairness, there was some talk there about China and the threat that it poses and what the G7 needs to do about it and so on. But it seems to me that demonstration of concern was something that the Chinese were obviously denouncing, but was much less significant than was the possibility of really injecting into the meeting with the 18 leaders in the Pacific a sense of American commitment and support and resolve that the cancellation of it has obviously suggested the contrary. But wouldn't that serve the Chinese interests? And I just mentioned, and you're probably familiar with the term, our colleague Trevor Loudon cites a Chinese expression, something to the effect of little bad mouth, big help, that indicates that the Chinese are willing to put up with, some public expressions that they would not prefer, but they understand have to be done for optics purposes. But as long as they're getting done what they really need done, and canceling that meeting and canceling the Quad for that matter, it seems to me to have been both in the service of the Chinese communist interests. Would you disagree?
I agree entirely with that characterization, Frank, that the G7 was overshadowed by Zelensky's visit. And having the Ukrainian leader come to the G7 in Asia at Hiroshima at a time where you're in the Asia-Pacific, the Indo-Pacific space, but to have that individual come shows the priority of the Biden administration is Ukraine, and its focus is on Ukraine. It is not on the Indo-Pacific. And
doesn't that serve the Chinese interest as well, Brad, to the extent that Ukraine is a sink for not only our interest and focus and energies, but also vast amounts of weaponry that we might well need in a shooting war with China? I mean, all of this, again, seems to fit that alternative thesis of the case, doesn't it?
It does indeed. Che Guevara, during our involvement in Vietnam, said he wanted 2-3 many Vietnams for the United States. Well, the Chinese Communist Party wants 2-3 many Ukraines for the U.S., where our resources, our energy, our focus flows to a sideshow, does not flow to the threat posed by Beijing and the growing strength of Beijing. While the G7 is going on, Xi Jinping is meeting with the leaders of the Central Asian republics, which is a very important development. So what he's doing there is eating Russia's lunch, right? He's signaling to the Russians that he's in charge of Central Asia, not the Russians anymore, which was a very important signal to Moscow, and what Putin should have expected when he threw his lot in with Xi Jinping. Indeed. As the lesser partner, the weaker partner.
And yet, Brad, one of the things that's going on at the same time is that the Russians have now opened up Vladivostok to use by the Chinese to a greater extent than in the past. All of that seems to me to suggest that Putin is not only the very junior partner in this so-called No Limits partnership, but that he's now increasingly doing what he's told by the senior partner.
Well, indeed, Frank, he's reaped what he's sowed. But we can take no comfort in that, because it just shows that China is growing. And while the G7 is going through its gymnastics on the Zelensky meeting and an ersatz meeting of the Quad shoehorned in, while cancellation of a true meeting in Australia, as well as the Papua New Guinea meeting and defense agreement that would have been signed, would have been very strong symbols to counter the political warfare of Xi Jinping. Instead, what we've gotten is, as Australian commentators and other commentators in the region, and India as well, have said, that the United States is signaling it's irresolute. It is weak.
Brad, that's where I want to come back to. We have to take another very short break. We'll be right back with Bradley Thayer on the state of U.S. relations with its allies in the Western Pacific and how that may play into China's war plans for us. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
In cities across the country, black garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
Welcome back. We are on the road and visiting with Dr. Bradley Thayer, one of my colleagues and very important partners in our Committee on the Present Danger, China. He is the author most recently of Understanding the China Threat. Few people will do better than he, and we're delighted to have a chance to visit with him against the backdrop of some very momentous developments in the U.S.-China relationship. And specifically the threat posed to us by the Chinese Communist Party. And Brad, I think we've set the stage nicely now for a little bit more of a drill down on what is it that the friends and allies of the United States are actually saying and otherwise communicating about their concerns that we lack the resolve, we lack the leadership to contend with a very serious and growing threat posed to them in their own countries and their region, as well as to us.
Well, Frank, they're shocked by it. They, in many respects, they can't believe it's happened. And that's, again, it was an honor, and the Papua New Guineans had gone, had again declared it a national holiday. So all individuals were off to attend the visit of the President of the United States, even brief visit. He wasn't going to be there long, but nonetheless, it was a momentous occasion, and he canceled it. It's an honor to be asked to address the Australian Parliament, and he canceled it as a result of it. So you can imagine that Australians, as they have been conveying, are alarmed by this.
I guess what I'm asking is how are they conveying it? What are they saying? What are they doing? Are we seeing, let me just put it this way, are we seeing any signs at all at the moment of what we have witnessed in places like the Persian Gulf with the Saudis, notably, or Latin America with the Brazilians, where basically it seems people running those countries are now throwing in with the Chinese Communist Party. They're making, if you will, separate pieces. In the case of Lula, it's not exactly a surprise because he's a Marxist after all. But there are changes that are taking place among important ally relationships, or they're not. Is that happening in the Pacific, I guess, is the question.
There are indeed, and there are historical references to Jimmy Carter, who was a weak president and who betrayed allies, the Shah of Iran, for example, leading to disastrous developments, which were the echoes of which we still encounter today. So, yeah, the concern is that the Biden administration's focus is at best irresolute. It's that they really don't know what they're doing.
But that's at best. Or let me underscore that. We're, I think, prepared to contemplate, I certainly am, and I think you are as well, that there's something else going on here. It's not just mistakes.
Indeed, that they are soft on China because China is their paymaster at the end of the day. Right. And so it's a.
And are you seeing signs that the allies are saying that, or at least perceiving that as well?
There's concern that the Comer investigation doesn't receive as much attention as it should in Australia, New Zealand, but there is concern that there's a problem here, and they're expressing it vocally, and so that in itself is worrisome. Again, as we've discussed previously, so the concern is that the United States has got to get its act together. If not, then there's going to be concern and greater proliferation pressures. There's going to be allies will find their own path, and that's going to be very hard for a future president to restore, to rebuild yes. credibility, to rebuild the trust in relationships once it's been vacated, once it's been lost. Mm-hmm. So you see Modi stepping up. You see the Japanese prime minister and the Australians as well thinking through that there may be a post-U.S. Security relationship. And that in itself is alarming. And if that was Biden's intent, because he wants to weaken the United States, well, he's certainly driving us to that point in time.
And I think that's a very important observation, is whether it's his intent or not, it's the practical effect. And on the other side of the ledger, I guess we've got how is Communist China perceiving all of this, and do they perceive, Brad Thayer, that Modi of India and the Japanese and Australians even combined constitute anything remotely like a countervailing power absent the United States?
Well, they recognize very much that the United States is the linchpin, that nothing will happen without the United States driving and managing the Quad and its intent to deal with expansion of Chinese power. So, Frank, the Chinese Communist Party is dancing in the streets at what has happened with the Biden administration's disastrous month and its passivity in dealing with it. So they're very excited about it, and they want 2-3 many Bidens for the United States, again, sure. Tomorrow from Che Guevara.
And again, I've got to be thinking, as they're very coldly calculating on all of this, what a splendid return on investment they've gotten from what they've, as James Comer and others have pointed out, including Hunter Biden's laptop, of course, that they've made over the years, tens of millions of dollars here, maybe $1 billion in Hunter's, investment fund and the like. So again, Brad, as a strategic analyst of the first order, what we're describing here, I think, can only be characterized as very portentous developments and evolving dynamics that likely, despite what we're being told, that relations are improving and warming and, nothing to see here, folks, I guess is kind of the bottom line. To the contrary, this danger from the Chinese Communist Party is growing by the day. And you've just provided in the Washington Times with our colleague, Captain James Fennell, again, one of our stars of our Committee on the Present Danger China and frequent contributors to this program. A very important piece about the actual peril here for both Taiwan, yes, but also for us. So give us a quick update on how things look on that front against the backdrop we've just laid.
It's very worrisome, Frank. Xi Jinping has been dynamic. He's been active. And this has been the case since he got his third term in October of last year, of October of 2022. He's been nothing but active in dealing with internal threats, but also external threat, the United States, while Biden has been the reverse of that. So what are we witnessing? What we're witnessing is that Xi is determined to invade and conquer Taiwan. And what he needs to do is shape the international environment in order to do so. And having a weak U.S. president ensures that aggression will be possible. It encourages Xi's attack against Taiwan because, again, our allies are scratching their heads at what's going on. And that's not what you want U.S. allies ever to do. Yes. So Xi is framing the international environment and making propitious for his attack in conjunction with the exercises that the military is running. He's setting the stage, if you will, in both a strategic sense and in a tactical sense for the attack against Taiwan, which may come very soon. Far more than 2025, or far sooner than 2025, it could come this year easily or next. As he's seeing that the wind is behind him, right? That he's got a fair wind and a following sea. And this is the time to act while Biden is weak, vacillating, and introduces ambiguity and confusion about what U.S. actions would be in that eventuality. And so it's a very dangerous time. Frank, this is the most dangerous time in the post-Cold War period. Mm-hmm. As a result of the growth of Chinese power, Xi's aggression, and fecklessness at the highest levels of the U.S. government. Very dangerous time.
Yeah. Well, and again, at the risk of pressing this point, if it's not just fecklessness, if it's not just mistakes, if it's not just passivity, if it's actually doing the bidding of the Chinese Communist Party, essentially to take the United States off the game board, you know, in a manner of speaking, to essentially assure that it will not interfere with China's ambitions towards Taiwan or more broadly. This is a very, very dangerous time indeed. And in fact, as we've argued in the indictment, Brad, if what we're looking at is all of this creating an intensified likelihood that the Chinese Communist Party will perceive a window of opportunity in which it can act with more or less impunity against, yes, Taiwan, but also against other allies and our bases on their territory and our assets and our personnel and even our own territory as well. And we'll talk more about that in a moment. This is an invitation to conflict, and the idea that the commander-in-chief of the United States military at that moment would be a guy working for the Chinese Communist Party is so unacceptable and so perilous that this has to be remedied, it seems to me, with the utmost urgency as well. Brad, we're going to take a very short break. When we come back, I want to talk with you about further evidence of Chinese preparations for war against our country and their implications for all of us. Be right back with that and more. Stay tuned.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute.
Representative Michelle Bachmann may no longer be in the U.S. Congress, but today she is serving our country far more capably than all but a handful of those who are. For the past week, Ms. Bachmann has been forward deployed in Geneva, Switzerland, where she is monitoring the most ambitious element of the Biden administration's multifaceted wrecking operation against our country. What she has witnessed firsthand should strike fear and fury in the hearts of every American patriot. Geneva hosts the World Health Organization and other international institutions that, along with their principal master, the Chinese Communist Party, seek global governance. They're pursuing the end of national sovereignty and, as a practical matter, that of our constitutional republic and freedoms. Michelle Bachmann and the rest of our sovereignty coalition are determined to prevent that betrayal of America. Stand with us now at sovereigntycoalition.org. This is Frank Affney. Welcome back, and we are continuing this conversation. It could be one of the most important of all of ours, with Dr. Bradley Thayer, a man who has deeply studied and understands better than just about anybody I know the nature of the Chinese Communist Party threat and how it is evolving in ways that may result not simply in ongoing and maybe even intensified unrestricted warfare against our country, the subject of our new book, The Indictment, but a shooting war as well. And Brad, we were talking about Taiwan, and I know you wanted to make one more point before I had to interrupt and bring that last segment to a close. Pick it up.
Thank you, Frank. The point, international stability depends on American military power, which has deterred aggression and maintained a degree of peace that we haven't seen in history, really, modern international political history. If Xi Jinping attacks Taiwan and he's successful, or if he's partially successful, or if he fails, that international order is going to shatter. Because what will have happened is the U.S. deterrent was called into question and found wanting, either because he was successful or even if he fails, it shatters the order. And so what Biden is doing is playing with fire at a level we've never seen an American president do. He's encouraging aggression that will remove the linchpin of stability. All of our allies will question, whether it's in NATO, whether it's in the Gulf, whether it's in the Indo-Pacific, all of them will question America's credibility and American power. So we could see, and Xi would profit from that, obviously. This would be a golden time for Xi Jinping, even if he fails in his attempt to conquer Taiwan, because he's undone the American security architecture. He's undone the structure of American power through its allies in international politics. So Biden is flirting with that, and that is gross malpractice, whatever the absence, the averse of statesmanship, it is incredibly dangerous. And we need to recognize that that's what's at stake. And we're on the cusp of it.
But that's the best case. Again, if the president is taking a dive, not only will the world order be shattered as we've known it, but the likelihood of Xi succeeding, and more to the point, achieving his far more important objective, I would argue, Brad, and that is removing the United States as the impediment to all of his global hegemonic ambitions. Which brings me to the next question. If the People's Liberation Army is pursuant to direction from Xi Jinping, mobilizing for war and not only mobilizing in the Pacific, but also in terms of dispatching perhaps special operations units in significant numbers, as we are seeing, fighting age unaccompanied men from China doing now every day, 100 or so of them at a time. One of our colleagues, Michael Yan, who will be contributing to a webinar on this very subject we will be doing on Friday, has said, based on his experience in the special forces himself in our country and also as a war correspondent for 2 decades, what he's seeing looks to him, in his professional judgment, to be organized units of, yes, fighting age unaccompanied men, also wearing identical kits or carrying backpacks and canteens that are identical, that is. All of which suggests there are perhaps, by some counts, as many as 5 battalions, which would be about 5,000 of these men, who have been not only insinuated across the border, but now distributed all over the United States, who would pose a mortal threat to our society, to our infrastructure, to our economy, to our people, perhaps activated at the very moment that China decides to attack elsewhere, Taiwan and other places besides. As a professional, do you credit that as a possible scenario that, again, would be extremely ominous for us here at home as well?
It would indeed, Frank. If you eliminate your border, you've opened yourself up to, you're eliminating your immune system, if you will, in the body politic. And so you've opened yourself up to whatever wants to walk through. And whatever wants to walk through certainly is going to contain an element of what's bad. And so we're going to be dealing with the effects of this open border for the rest of our lives. As this is an effort to change American society, American politics in perpetuity. I would say that that's exactly right. With the balloon that passed over was, and the
Biden Surrey balloon, as the president described it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Indeed, he did, was a signal, a political warfare signal, that the United States homeland is at play and that they are targeting the American people in the United States. And so I think that was a very important symbol, and the fact that they're bringing through individuals who are certainly saboteurs, who would be agents of to conduct sabotage or to conduct assassination or confusion, to attack the infrastructure or individuals or institutions, yeah, is absolutely spot on, Frank.
Insurgent operations.
It indeed. It's importing an insurgency. And so we are going to be dealing with the consequences of that. And that is another symbol, another sign that we're moving on Taiwan. Things are changing very quickly. And there's a lack of appreciation, I think, on the Hill, as well as in the executive, as well as within the government, about how rapidly things are changing. Events are changing against us. And the expectation
to say nothing of the public, and this is a point to which we'll return again after a final short break with you, Bradley Thayer. To the extent that the American people still have very little idea of the magnitude of the threat we face from the Chinese Communist Party, let alone the extent to which we may be jeopardized further by a complicit U.S. government, is something that is of the utmost importance for us to correct. Again, we're trying to, with our book, The Indictment, and yours, of course, Understanding the Threat, the China Threat. We'll be right back with more on all of that right after this. We're back for this final installment of a very important conversation, hour-long conversation with Dr. Bradley Thayer, my colleague at the Center for Security Policy, where he directs our China program. He is also, importantly, an author of, almost countless essays, but also several important books, including most recently, Understanding the China Threat. Brad, there are some who take comfort from the fact that while there might be these various ominous developments or portentous dynamics at work, that Xi Jinping has some very serious problems at home, including, you know, banking crisis, real estate bubble that's burst, demographic disaster, environmental problems of the first order, and on and on. In your professional judgment, sir, does all of that suggest that he will be distracted or deterred from these kinds of external adventures? Or do you think they might, and to the contrary, impel him onwards in engaging in them?
I think, Frank, on your last point, it's to the contrary. I would add also his health. He's rumored to have serious health problems. And so he's a man who we, of course, don't know how long the thread the fates have cut for us ever is. But he's an individual who does have serious health problems, as you'd expect. And so that also must suggest that his opportunity to have an effect on the PRC, on the People's Republic of China, and delivering it where he wants it to go, is on the back, always weighs on his mind. So yes, he has many problems. And to that long list, we would add his health. And that suggests there's a rapidity to, there's an urgency to his actions that we have seen since he came to power in November of 2012.
And that's in part because, of course, he has this aspiration, as you've documented in your book, to be bigger than Mao. He wants to be an historic figure of extraordinary proportions. But also, Brad, talk a bit about, you know, how tyrants often proceed when they face these kinds of internal challenges.
Certainly. I think that he wants to be one of the greatest men of the 21st century. I think that's quite clear in his ambition, that there will be a major figure like Hitler, Stalin, Churchill, Mao of the 20th century. So he will be of the 21st century. And he's well on his way of achieving that in terms of the way he's secured his power in the People's Republic of China, the way he has ensured that China continues to grow despite hiccups and despite tremendous difficulties. So that's very positive from his perspective. Dictators like Xi Jinping, and he is a dictator, we need to recognize are driven by those urgencies of domestic crises to aggress, to distract attention on their own failings or their own illegitimacy. And of course, the Chinese Communist Party is an illegitimate government. And then also health, individual health.
I call it a transnational criminal organization to boot, actually.
Indeed, Frank, you do in your book, The Indictment, it very carefully documents the consistent malign behavior of the Chinese Communist Party is exactly that, as that type of an organization. But you can see that dictators have concerns about the fact that what they want to achieve is going to be limited by their own mortality. Mm-hmm. And this must weigh on Xi Jinping with his health problems and with the other problems that possess. So for personal reasons, and then also the problems that he faces domestically within China and the opportunities that he sees in international politics, This is the time to act.
But also, if you have internal problems, if you can blame a boogeyman outside of the country as a threat and vector the energies of the society to countering that threat and thereby justifying repression and sacrifice on the part of your people, I think it goes down a lot better than if you're just, you know, tearing off into a new actual aggression of your own. But Brad, let me ask you about one last thing, if I could. The time always flies by. There's so much more to discuss, but I'm so glad that we've covered as much as we have. But there was a long article in Fortune magazine recently. I don't know if you saw it, but it basically was dissecting the unraveling of the Belt and Road Initiative, this great venture of Xi Jinping's. I call it a colonial infrastructure build-out, with countries defaulting or failing to make their payments, the Chinese refusing to, you know, cut them any slack on loans, or if doing so, doing so sort of grudgingly. Just a quick final minute and a half on the status of that and what it tells us about the internal difficulties of China and the possibility that it will go to war, the old-fashioned kind.
It's not a surprise that China is having problems in building its colonial empire. So all colonial powers have had that from Spain and Portugal until today. So yes, interaction with the Chinese Communist Party is guaranteed to result in actually the agreement that you've reached with this satanic organization, right? Mm. With an organization that is evil, it is illegitimate, and it exploits people and the environment ruthlessly. So the BRI has an element of buyer's remorse for those who have engaged in it should be expected, but that's not going to... the Chinese have, in essence, established infrastructure for their expansion through the BRI, right, through Belt and Road Initiative. And so that remains, even if there are going to be, if you will, half steps backwards as countries recognize what they've done and try to get out of it and try to alter course.
Yeah. And under the terms of those loans, I think in many cases, at least, if not all of them, the Chinese get to expropriate the infrastructure they've built, and they've designed it, at least much of it, for both commercial and military purposes, which means that they can be putting in place global power projection capabilities in support of the kind of war that they seem to have in mind for us, among others. Something that would make the world wars of the past pale, I'm afraid, into insignificance. Brad, a lot of awesome and ominous news here. Thank you for following it as brilliantly as you do and for sharing your insights with us whenever possible. Come back to us again if you would soon.
Thank you, Frank.
In the meantime,
my pleasure.
Stay well. I hope the rest of you will join us next time for more of Securing America. Till then, go forth and multiply.